This podcast is part of the Deluxe Edition Network. To find other great shows on the network, head over to deluxeeditionnetwork.com. That's deluxeeditionnetwork.com.
The podcast making, public transit taking, kiss stealing, wheeling, dealing, son of the gun, Tim the Nerd, welcoming you to another episode of Friends Talking Nerdy, proud member of the Deluxe Edition Network. If you go to deluxeeditionnetwork.com, you can find out about all of the shows that have joined that group. Sitting next to me with a look on her face like she's getting ready to like go to sleep to end this week officially so that by tomorrow she can be up and ready to go to kick life's ass. Greatest legal mind in the Pacific Northwest, Professor Aubrey. How you doing?
Wow, that was quite a introduction. I don't feel like I'm particularly tired at this moment. I'm more, you know, something just happened. We should tell the listeners so they understand that something weird just happened. I had a crown pop off my tooth. I know that many people have had that happen before, and it hurts a lot depending on what you've got going on underneath that. Like if you've had a root canal, it doesn't matter, but this tooth has not had a root canal. So I think it's fine, but I'm just a little nervous about talking a lot, which is what we're doing right now.
But through the benefits of pruning, one way or the other, we're going to be able to wrap this up to have a complete episode. So that is the beauty of podcasting. We're not doing a live show. We're not here live in front of a studio audience, you know, and we have plenty of episodes to dip into the vault if we weren't even able to finish this particular episode, but we're already one episode ahead. So, you know, we are in no real rush here to complete the recording tonight as we record this. I mean, obviously, we want to provide something for the good people that listen to us each and every week. And there will be something here, folks. But you get my point. I'm rambling.
Absolutely, I get your point. And I'm totally fine. I'm just nervous about it. Like, I don't think anything will actually happen. So I think we're totally good. I'm not in any pain right now. And feeling good and awake. So we're gonna do it.
Do it, baby. All right, we'll start off here on a quick somber note. You know, because we are recording, because we already have a couple episodes in the bag already, this episode is going to come out a couple of weeks after this news has already been discussed in public. So you forgive us for kind of going
over it. Which, of course, is how we know. Like, you say that, like, we have some secret in with the obituary department where they let us know who's going to die before anybody else
knows. No, I'm talking about, like, the general public a couple weeks from now will probably, you know, I mean, maybe there are some people that will still be binge-watching Friends with tears coming down their eyes, but, you know, a celebrity that just happened to be on TV, I think for most people is, and it sounds like a dick thing to say, but it's also true, and I don't say it with any malice, but we've lost a couple of actors that had memorable TV roles in the 80s and 90s.
Yes, we have.
Yeah, first of all, Richard Mall from Night Court. That's the show he's most famous for, where he played Bull Shannon, mm-hmm. The bailiff with the bald head and, you know, kind of a childlike demeanor, but big hulking guy. He was 80 years old, and I've said it for people that have passed away that are similar to his age. You know, statistically, that is what is considered a full life. So it's a different feeling when someone reaches the end of the finish line. Mm-hmm. But it's still a sad event here. But not only was he great in Night Court, but I loved him more than anything in Batman the Animated Series. Because not only did he do the occasional like background character voice, but he was also famous for doing Harvey Dent Two-Face.
Really?
Yeah, and they had the great thing about the Batman the Animated Series was it was kind of like the best kind of amalgamation of all the parts of Batman that had been out to that point. You know, it took visual elements from the Tim Burton films. It took the seriousness of the 70s and 80s comics. It did have your little dabs of hilarity similar to the Adam West stories, you know, when the Joker came to town or something like that. But the Two-Face story showed Batman the Animated Series at its absolute best, and that's just telling a drama, you know. And, you know, like we talked about with that show before, that was one of the first times that companies actually try to put some real money into a cartoon primarily for kids, and the results speak for themselves. You know, we're definitely, you know, still watching it today plenty of times on Max and all that, but he will be missed. The other one was a bit of a shock, and that was Matthew Perry, star of Friends. If you remember TV back in the 80s, he was a guest star in pretty much everything at some point. He even had like a recurring role in some of the later seasons of Growing Pains. And I think that's one of the first times I saw him. He was only 54 years old. Last I checked, they suspect he may have had a heart attack and ended up, or they found him dead in his jacuzzi at home. You know, he did have a history of drug problems that he had been very open about. He'd been to rehab a couple of times. So it's certainly possible that, you know, someone in his position who likes to party may have put a lot more strain on his heart than, you know, a drug addict with my credit score. You know?
Right. Yeah. But often the cheaper drugs are worse for you than the more expensive ones. So I think it's not quite true.
Yeah, I mean, that was more for a cheap joke than anything else. But yeah, because we do have meth people.
Yep. Yeah, so Richard Mull, I really loved his character on Night Court. And he might have been my favorite part of that show because he was just such a good actor. He really seemed like that character. Like it was such an interesting character, and he played it so well.
Which is interesting too, because I mean that show Night Court was, you know, in a lot of ways two-dimensional comedy. Like it's not, I mean, a sitcom is going to be zany. It's not going to be like putting a video camera in your house and taping you and putting that result on TV. This is writers writing a story, actors acting that story out. And when it comes to sitcoms, they have to be done in particular ways, broadly, and especially for something like comedy. But, you know, to your point, yeah, like Richard Mull and the rest of that cast, even ones that didn't necessarily stay with the life of the show, like Ellen Foley, like they did really well at making it seem like, even with all the ludicrous stuff that happened on that show, that, you know, these characters were real people.
Yeah. Yeah, because there was some ridiculous shit that happened on that show. It was a really funny show. I mean, I think John Larroquette, that was his best character ever.
I would agree. And while it was nice to see Dan Fielding back in the revival of Night Court, like, that revival just didn't work for me. I love, I can trim all my you-knows now.
And your indies.
Yeah. Anyway, what I didn't like about that, it seemed like at the beginning of the show, you had the Melissa Rauch, I believe her name is, who used to be on the Big Bang Theory as a star of that show. And then she's the main character. She plays Harry Stone's daughter.
Yes, so we watched an episode of this.
Yeah, and like at the beginning of the episode, like she came in, you know, this is my first day on the job. My father used to work here 30 years ago, and I didn't like that. Why did I not like that? Because I just don't see that ever really happening and people caring. Maybe you do have a kid that, you know, wants to get, you know, into their parents' business and whatnot. But it was presented in a way to say, hey, we're in the same world of the original Night Court. It was lazy writing.
Yeah.
At its best. And also to kind of like Dan Fielding, his major thing on the original run of the show was sex. He had a lot of sex during that show, and not bringing that up in any way, shape, or form in the reboot, like, not even, because I did read some interviews where Larroquette was like, you know, the guys, you know, Dan Fielding is like, what, in his 60s or 70s, we don't need to see that type of story, which commendable on his part. But I just wish that there was some explanation as to why. There wasn't one that I was satisfied with, let's put it that way. I mean, because it seemed like...
On the show itself.
Yeah, I mean, because it seemed like that they were implying that, you know, Dan was living mostly alone. So maybe it's something that they pick up on a future season if the show lasts. I know it's going into a season 2. And Marsha Warfield, Roz, is coming back. She actually appeared in the very last episode of season 1.
That's so exciting. Love Roz.
Yep. So,
and Roz and
Bull
were so great together.
They were kind of like a Martin and Lewis type of deal, you know, Burns and Allen, and Matthew Perry as well. Like, I'm not a huge fan of Friends, but to me, Friends would be more perfect for something like Pluto TV, you know, in the past when I've had it on, you can, one, get some laughs. It's not like The Big Bang Theory, one of the worst shows ever made in human history.
Oh, my goodness.
Because with Friends, at least you have good writing.
You know? I mean, I remember Friends was, like, made for me, right? I was, 16 when it first started, maybe.
No, in the mid-90s. It started in the early 90s, like 92, 93.
Oh, so I was like 18.
Yeah, so you're on your way to college.
Yeah, on my way to college. So this is the target audience for this show about young adults who live in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And so for people like me who couldn't be farther from Manhattan, I think it was...
You live vicariously through them?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I can see that. It's sad that he's gone. The show itself has had a long legacy. I remember when it debuted, too, because, like, every single one of the main cast members had been in other TV shows to the point to where they were getting noticed. Already. Like, I mean, Courtney Cox, she was in Family Ties and had a big part
Courtney
of the show.
Courtney Cox. I love you.
You're so hot
on that show.
We'll talk later, Gerald. I remember David Schwimmer was in some of the episodes of The Wonder Years. Matt LeBlanc was in some episodes of Married with Children. Jennifer Aniston was on a failed sitcom version of Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Whoa, was she the girlfriend?
Yeah, I think she played the Jennifer Grey character. The sister.
Oh, the sister.
Or something like that. Yeah, it wasn't a memorable role. Mm-hmm. Anything like that. And Lisa Kudrow, of course, she played I think the character's name was Ursula on Mad About You. This broody waitress at a coffee shop that they actually retconned in Friends as stating that that is Phoebe's cousin.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's like you knew all of them from elsewhere, and then they got together and just, if anything about that show, the reason, even though I'm not a huge fan, it's something that if it's on, I will watch, is because of the chemistry of the cast. I mean, it felt real. It felt like that they were really friends and not actors paid to perform a job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Know, similar to Night Court. I think that's why, you know, shows like that, to where it feels real, even in the most ludicrous states, like Star Trek. I mean, people still watch the original run of Star Trek from the 60s, and, you know, special effects wise, you can get better results from, you know, kids doing YouTube videos that they're filming in their backyard now with better special effects, but people still gravitate towards William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy on, you know, cardboard sets.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't really... I mean, you see Picard, though. Like, I think it continues that people watch Star Trek because it's the relationships and the characters, not the special effects or the aliens or the monsters.
I mean, it depends on what iteration we're talking about. Like, the movies have become more action-focused, and that's not necessarily a bad thing compared to, like, some of the Next Generation movies that came out that were just... awful pieces of work. But there is also a part of Star Trek that's not really there in the J.J. Abrams, the mid-2000s and later films, because of the fact that you don't have some of the soul, the deep conversations that you have. I mean, because Star Trek had its action, but it also had its, you know, philosophical points. You know, like there's an episode, I mean, this is the Next Generation, of course, but Data built his own offspring and allowed the offspring to choose their gender. And this is on a show back in the 90s.
Wow.
You know, and Star Trek, the original run, even though in the story that, you know, they were coerced by a higher being to do it, let's not forget William Shatner and Nichelle Nichols with the first interracial kiss on television.
Whoa.
You know.
Yeah, it's true.
Anyway, we wanted to be able to just bring up those names real quick because, again, even if it's an actor that you don't follow passionately and know every single bit about their life story, these are people that at some point or another made you laugh, made you cry, made you think, just gave you an emotion that wasn't there before. So when people like that pass, you got to honor.
Yeah, it's nice just to mention them.
Indeed. Indeed. Now, let's talk about women.
Yes. What's going on with women these days?
It is a list of places women absolutely refuse to go on a first date to. And I think it would be interesting to kind of go through this list to see if they have some points or if it's just certain women who think that they should, even if they work as a cashier at a grocery store, should be taken to a high upscale restaurant and, you know, have lobster and caviar or something like that.
Well, I mean, I think society sets women up to expect someone to swoop into their lives and fix everything about it, including their socioeconomic status.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I'd say that's what they want, no matter who they are. Like, what's the problem with money? It doesn't, certainly not negative
to
have more money. I don't, you know, I think whoever you are.
I mean, to me, I think part of the problem is that there are some women that view men as investment opportunities. And don't view them as another human being that could contribute to their life in a positive way. And because of what society says, you know, women should expect, they do have some unrealistic ideas. Would you say no to somebody that wanted to take you to the Cheesecake Factory on a first date? You're a classy dame, so it looks like no.
My problem with the Cheesecake Factory is it's insanely expensive for what it is. So I would be like, concern. I wouldn't want somebody to spend their money that way, I guess, is why I would not want to go there. But I wouldn't not go out with someone because they went. I would be like, oh, that could be kind of ironically funny. Like, it would be more like, what did they act like? Were they like, this place is the greatest place ever? Or were they like, had some reason they liked going there?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think you and I have been to the Cheesecake Factory once.
I love the Cheesecake Factory.
Yeah. And I mean,
they have this insane menu that just goes on for. I've only been there twice.
Mm-hmm.
One time with you, one time with someone else a long time ago.
But to your point, yeah, like, the price-wise, it definitely can get up there depending on your budget level.
Like $18 for a salad.
Yeah.
It's $23 for a plate of pasta. Like, it's ridiculous.
And the Dutchman in me is like, I can go to the store right now and get all the ingredients for under $10. There's no way I'm going to pay this. But the next group here, numbers 2, 3, 4, and 5, Applebee's, Chili's, Chipotle, or Olive Garden. Like, have I ever brought a date to one of those? Sure. It is like a Wendy's compared to a McDonald's in terms of quality. At least Wendy's back in the day when they used to have the salad bar. Remember when Wendy's had a salad bar?
Oh my God, Wendy's had a salad bar.
Yeah. I kind of don't get because, like, the one thing that these four restaurants have in common is that they do have pretty standard American type food.
Right.
You know, burgers, fries, stuff like that with Olive Garden, more pasta dishes. But it's
Chipotle is Mexican, presumably, and Chili's is Tex-Mex, presumably. Applebee's is kind of the only one that's bland American.
Yes, the bologna sandwich store.
Yeah.
But at least you know what you get there. It's relatively inexpensive, but, you know, it is not like one of the choices here of any fast food chain. You know, like at 47, I'm not taking a first date to McDonald's.
No.
You know, unless McDonald's was like the end part of something else that we did. Like if we went on a long hike and did afterwards. But again, I don't even know if that I would do that like on a first date. Like that's more of a just something you would do with people, regardless of whether you're in a romantic relationship or not. Like you do.
Right. Like let's stop and get some fries on our way home from hiking.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The next one here, I don't get why it's on this list. The movies.
You skipped one. Oh, the movies. Yeah. So the problem with the movies as a first date is that there's no conversation. And on a first date, you want to converse. You want to find out about someone. You want to see if there's chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
If you can have a conversation. And that's not happening in the movies. And so I would feel very frustrated that I couldn't, that my only way of communicating would be to physically touch them
and the heart.
And I'm not in that place on a first date, maybe.
Yeah, understand.
So then we just sit there next to each other watching a movie, and it's not pushing anything forward. It's just, I'm enjoying a movie with someone I don't know.
You put it that way. Yeah. I mean, I had some first dates at the movies? I have. Do I still have those people in my life? No. So maybe I've answered the question right there. But I guess under the idea of a first date, okay. I can live with that one. The next one here, your house.
Yeah, this one flummoxes me because I think that's one of the best places to have a first date is at somebody else's house.
I mean, it depends on the situation, of course. I think, if you match up with somebody on a dating app, and then within 5 minutes you're like, you want to come over to my house? Like that. I can understand where a woman's like, nah, I'm cool. But if you develop a rapport with the person and you talk, I mean, have I had, you know, first dates that have ended up at my house? Damn right. You know, but I think if anything, I think the important thing there is that may be one you don't necessarily expect to continuously happen. I think that's for, you know, certain situations to where the chemistry's just right.
Yeah, I'm just saying I like to go to people's houses because I think you get a lot of information about them when you go to their house.
Like a circuit board guy.
Like a circuit board guy. He was way into circuit boards.
Mm-hmm.
And Tim had this great way of talking, like, just like a circuit board. Let me finish before you do it. Talking like someone you might expect to be into circuit boards to sound like. He didn't actually sound like this. So just to be clear, this is just a voice that Tim made up at the thought of someone who was really into circuit boards.
Would you like to see my circuit board? Oh, man.
Yeah. So they're right. So you discover, wow, this person has a room full of circuit boards.
I think here, too, the important thing is like with.
He also had original gels from Dune.
But with circuit board guy, though.
And Tron.
You had enough of a rapport with him that by the time it was offered to have the date at his place, you were comfortable with it.
I'm always comfortable, more comfortable. I'm way more comfortable going to people's houses than I am having them come to mine.
You're not coming here. But for safety reasons, though.
Safety reasons. Absolutely. Like, if I, you know, go to anybody's house and I don't feel safe there, I'm not going to get out of the car and go there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, let's dive in here further on the list. Number 9, 10, and 11. Buffalo Wild Wings, Wingstop, and Red Lobster. I mean, come on. What if you can't have a lady fall for you by taking her to Red Lobster? What kind of world is it?
Again, you know, it's super expensive. And for what you get, it's just not worth that kind of money.
In Buffalo Wild Wings, like, I don't know if I necessarily want to bring a date and have her over here like insurance salesman with one too many beers talking talking about business of the day, mm-hmm. or, you know, people that are there watching like the game or something like that. Wingstop too. Like, I've never been a wings guy anyway, so it's like, you're not going to get me there, but that's maybe someplace you bring a date maybe later.
Like when they say, oh man, I love Wingstop wings.
Yeah. And Red Lobster. Wow. Like, I get that. Now the next one here, a buffet. You know, you don't want to bring your first date to Golden Corral.
Somebody I was friends with or something was very into the Golden Corral. And so I have been there a couple of times, and it is the most ridiculous place in the universe to go have a meal. But it's like $14.95 for all you can eat a bunch of bizarre food. So if you're into that, or if you're from another country and you want to see how Americans really live, you should go to the Golden Corral.
I've been at Golden Corral a few times in regards to buffets. They probably are one of the best that I've been to because they use spices and, better quality meats compared to stuff like a home style buffet or home country buffet or whatever they call it out here. Because mm-hmm. that's just for people that can't hold down solid food.
You know, there's bland diet.
Yeah, but to your point, would I ever be dumb enough to take a first date, mind you, to a place like Golden Corral? No. Now, like, having said that, back in Grand Rapids, they used to have, it was a local restaurant. It wasn't like a chain restaurant, but, they sold steaks, but they also had like a buffet where you can get meals as well. And it was kind of, the inside was kind of like designed to look like a lodge. Mm-hmm. You know, so someplace like that, I'd be willing to, you know, test the waters on just because of the ambiance, the atmosphere. And
oh my gosh. Food, well, there are some. So you've got your low class buffets, but you have buffets for every class of people in the United States. That's the great thing about capitalism, mm-hmm. is that everybody gets the same opportunity to buy shit. And
well, think of the people that go, what is that, the Thai food places, to where it's like all you can eat, but you got to put all your food in the little bowls, and then the cook will cook it up for you.
Oh, uh-huh. That's hot pot.
Yeah. To places like that, like that's like upper class version of.
Well, I was going to say the actual lodge. So like at Timberline and at Skamania and at that Heisman Lodge, they have these holiday buffets that are just over the top. They got like snow crab legs and giant roast beef that they're cutting it off for you, prime rib or whatever. You can have steaks made to order, like basically whatever you want, really high quality, high end food. And it's like $100 a person just to get in. And that doesn't count tip or beverage or something.
Speaking of that, you're not going to get that in these next two places. Number 13 and 14, IHOP and Denny's. Like, if you are a trucker and you're dating someone you met at a truck stop and you bring her to an IHOP, maybe that's great. But,
But see, I think it depends also on your age. Like, the IHOP was the place that was opened after 2 a.m. Mm-hmm. So, like, it wasn't a stigma to go to the IHOP.
But it wasn't.
Everybody went there in the middle of the night.
But it wasn't the primary place where people went. People would usually end up at a place like an IHOP or a Denny's after the club's closed.
No, but yes. Okay, so that's the gateway drug of the IHOP. But once you've gone there once and you found the foreign pancake of your choice, mm-hmm. it is very hard not to go to the IHOP, because where else can you get lingonberry crepes at 3 a.m.?
So if you matched with a fella on a dating app and he said, let's go to the IHOP for our very first date, you'd be like, yes.
If it was ironic.
Don't you think?
I might be down.
What do you mean by ironic?
Some people have a character that it makes sense for them to want to go to IHOP in a way that isn't, I want to take you to IHOP because it's my favorite restaurant.
This is where I bring all the classy ladies.
Yeah, you know, like it's funny.
You're ironically enjoying the pancakes. Okay. The next one here, number 15. The ladies apparently don't like their first dates happening at the gym. I kind of get that. I mean,
unless they're both gym rats and met at the gym.
But even then, like, unless you specifically say our first date is a workout date, I mean, do you want to continue to go? It would be like dating a coworker, but only having the dates at the place where you work.
Yeah, okay. That all makes sense to me now. Yeah. You would want to go someplace other than the gym for your first date, even if you met at a gym.
Yeah, and I, you know, the idea of doing something active is not necessarily a bad thing for a first date because, you know, it gets your body moving and, you know, in a place like the gym, it is theoretically possible to talk, but it's also the gym, you know, think of the, you know, the guy with steroids.
Smelly and sweaty.
Yeah.
Grody.
Yeah, you know, they're, yeah, I had a joke there, it's gone. But next one here, what if you had a first date? And the guy says, hey, the place I want to take you for our first date is my church.
That happened all the time in the South.
Oh, man.
Yeah, inviting somebody to go to church with you was like a deal. Like, it was clearly a romantic deal.
I'll let you read Deuteronomy with me.
Won't you come to my church? A lot of people have losing their virginity stories in the South that involve churches.
I think a lot of people in a lot of places in the world have losing their virginity stories in church.
why do you think that is?
Whether consensually or not. But,
oh.
Too soon.
Like, not even over yet, too soon.
Like, I know there are some dating apps out there that are specifically geared towards a religious audience. So, theoretically, I'm sure there are two people that have the same religious beliefs to where this may be okay, but I think it would kind of fall under what you said about the movies, because you're going to church, unless you're talking about, you know, like a Pentecostal church like you saw in the Blues Brothers, you're just sitting there.
See, that's the kind of church we had in the South. You get to know a lot about somebody going to church with them, actually, because you meet most of their community outside their work, and you see what kind of people those are, and right, if they're tongue speaking, snake handling, etc., then you know you don't want to go out with them, basically.
Yeah, we'll leave that for Sarah Palin. She's part of a snake handling church.
Mm-hmm.
She could have been vice president. Anyway, the next two on the list here are kind of linked, but number 18 one I kind of disagree with. Starbucks and coffee dates. Like Starbucks, yeah, being a national chain, like, yeah, I wouldn't bring like a date to the Starbucks kiosk at Target.
Right.
You know, but, you know, but.
It was the only coffee shop around.
I guess, but, you know, in a place like Portland, Oregon, though, there are plenty of options.
Oh, there's no excuse.
There's no excuse to go to a place like Starbucks for a first date, because no. You can support local business.
Have better coffee.
Have much better coffee and just better ambiance. Now, small towns, maybe the Starbucks, to your point, is the only thing that's there. And if you bring a date and they're amiable to it, great, enjoy your time.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do think a coffee date, to me, is probably the initial way I like to start things off. Because if you can sit there, have a hot drink, because with a hot drink, you're not scarfing it down and getting ready for the next one like you would at a club. You have to take your time to savor it. And that's, you know, look, that allows you and the other person to have as long or short of conversation as you want.
Yeah.
Like us. Hey, it worked.
Yeah. I mean, I've had lots of first coffee dates, and I think they're great. I mean, they're a little bit awkward at first, unless you just have a really great rapport with someone, as we did,
mm-hmm.
where it didn't feel awkward at all at any point to me.
I agree with that. But it's to your point, I think that speaks to the point of getting to know the person you're potentially, you know, or looking to date a little more, so you know what they would potentially like. I think that's the big thing here. You know, there are people that would offer to take somebody on a date that don't take the time to find out even just a little about them. You know, because maybe there is somebody that would be cool with, like, going to Powell's Books and walking to the bookstore and just having a quick coffee on the way out. And that's a great first date.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you don't really talk to them about their interests and find out that, you know, hey, they like to read and buy books. Who knows, you know?
Yeah, I think that's really true. I mean, I think in online dating, if that's what we're talking about, then I think the first date is really important. When you meet somebody more organically, you've met through some common interest, or on the off chance, you run into them with a big pile of packages in your arms and they all fly everywhere and they help you pick up all the packages. And as they do so, your eyes meet and you fall helplessly and deeply in love.
Sounds like any sort of romantic movie out there. Hallmark has made a bundle making romance movies like that.
Yes.
Yes. All right. The next one here, ice cream dates.
See, I would love that. Ice cream is one of my favorite things. If somebody asked me what I wanted to do right now, and I said, I don't really feel like doing anything, and they said, do you want to go get some ice cream? I would say yes.
And I can see where maybe, you know, if you live in Portland, Maine, for instance, in the middle of winter and it's negative 11 degrees out.
Well, sure.
Yeah, maybe you don't want ice cream.
The same thing would be, let's go out for a hot cocoa.
Exactly. Yeah, this is one that, you know, I think would be, it would show too that, like, think it would show too that you got a bit of fun, a bit of a kid in you, I guess. And you can, you know, start at a place like Baskin Robbins, get like an ice cream cone or something like that, and then walk the neighborhood or something, you know, or whatever. The next one here, family functions. Yeah, this is a big no-no. Like, bringing a first date to Thanksgiving dinner, come on. Don't put a person in that particular situation. Like, it would be great. You would be lucky if the person you bring has enough social skills to be able to be comfortable in a situation like that, but you can't guarantee that.
Right.
And yeah, that one's just wrong. The next one here, movie night at home, Netflix, Hulu. Like, this is a know your audience type of deal. Like, this is not one you would offer as your default. This is a first date type of deal. I think this is one to where if you really know the person, this is one you say, hey, why not try this? Netflix and chill, right? That is a thing.
Mm-hmm. Netflix and chill is totally a thing.
Yep. This one I agree with. Somewhere that requires a long ride. If you don't know a person, especially if, you know, you are physically weaker or something like that, I can see to where taking like a 2-hour ride to someplace with someone you've never met before would be a little creepy.
That said, some of the deepest relationships I've ever developed have involved long rides places.
Yeah. But I think, again, that speaks to the know your audience the part when it comes to dating here. The next one, bowling. I think that would be kind of fun. I don't get why people would be against bowling. Like, do I think there are like super hardcore femme women out there that would love bowling? Maybe not, but I don't necessarily like them anyway.
I love bowling.
Exactly. Nightclubs or a hookah bar. Like, nightclubs are a place you go to theoretically meet people, not bring them for the first time. And in a hookah bar, that's a little much, I would think.
I mean, I think, again, you got to know your audience. Mm-hmm. Maybe they go to the nightclub every night and that's where they want to go. Or maybe, you know, you connected on your love of hookah. Like, there are reasons. And they're down here, you know, 23, 24, 25. Like, that's pretty low down the list. I mean, that's below in terms of unacceptability, so more acceptable than a coffee date.
I don't know if this list was compiled based on, you know, the voting. It's possible it's just,
oh, it's not weighted list. It's yeah. Not like number one is the best.
Yeah. It was not a scientific thing as well. And I might as well throw in the next one here, a bar just for drinks. I mean, wouldn't that be similar to coffee just with alcohol? I mean
those are the two number one first dates. Let's go get a drink or let's go have coffee,
because you want it to be simple. You want, because the first date is to test out if the chemistry's there.
Yeah, and if it's not, then you just say it was great to meet you and I will you know, it was great to meet you.
And you haven't bye. Well, lady, I got my circuit board here. making fun of him on the show. yeah, so I don't get, I mean, a bar for just drinks, like, know your audience. You want to make sure that you're not inviting a person who has gone through rehab and is trying to avoid alcohol to a bar for just drinks. But that one I can see being good. But the next one here, I've never been to a Waffle House, but Waffle House is on the list.
It would be the same as the IHOP.
Yeah.
Yeah, same deal. Someplace you go in the middle of the night, but and then you might like the food, so you might go there during the day. Mm-hmm. But your attraction to it is it's available in the middle of the night.
Gotcha. The last one here on the list, I think this kind of falls into the category of the movies selection, and it's sports events. Like, here in Portland, we have the Trailblazers, we have the soccer teams here. We also have, like, some, you know, high school and college sports that happen here as well. So there's a sporting event pretty much every single night of the year in town. But I can just imagine, like, I don't think we would have done well if, like, my first date was bringing you to wrestling.
You know, ironically, I could have taken it. And I think I disagree with this a little bit because I think more than the movies, you're going to be spending more than you're more time together. Like, you've got to get to the stadium. Uh-huh. You've got to maybe eat something before you go to the stadium. You're going to be at the stadium for 3 hours. Yeah, you really don't want to do that.
That's yeah.
A bad first date.
Yeah, I mean, that's great for friends or family, but you know, first date, no, save your money, go to a coffee shop, buy her a drink. Mm-hmm. I thought that was an interesting list. It, in some ways, as a guy, it can make you go, you know, knowing that there are women out there that will take a perfectly reasonable date idea and think like you're asking them, you know, to come look at your, you know, stuffed cat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I think the point here that we've made multiple times was the overall, it's the importance of getting to know a person enough to know, because like for me, I know the types of dates that I usually go on, you know, the places I go, the things I'm interested in or places where I bring other people. So I already have a general idea. So if I'm talking to somebody that, you know, says, well, how about we go to Paris for a week and do this? You're like, no, I can't do that.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I think a lot of online dating dates are at somebody's house, honestly.
Depending on the, like, Tinder, yeah, people are fucking me. Yeah. Come here. Again, try not to let the overall noise that you hear when it comes to stuff like dating kind of keep you from getting to know another person and offering what you feel will be a time to get to know them in a time to where you both can enjoy each other's time.
Pleasant surroundings.
Yeah. You know, don't think twice about where, and if you are dating somebody that is worried about the cost of the date or any other of these antiquated notions of what dating should be, move the fuck on.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know a lot of people who, I don't talk to people about their opinions about dating these days. It's not something that comes up for me in conversation. But I remember there were always women who, and maybe men, I don't know, I didn't know any men like this, but judged someone on whether they paid or not to begin with, and then what they were paying for. And like, do I like this person? It depends on whether they paid for my dinner. It depends on whether I like where they took me to dinner. And that to me is just gross and disgusting. I don't know how prevalent that is anymore. I'd like to think the world has progressed to a point where people are not judged solely by their socioeconomic capabilities.
Well, there are women out there that will match with a guy on a dating app and then go out to a date, like at a restaurant or for drinks or something like that, just to be able to have a free meal.
Really?
Yeah.
How do you know this?
I mean, articles I've read, you know, videos I've seen on TikTok and stuff like that. It is a thing. Now, is that most women? No. But there are some that do that.
Have you ever run into that in all your online dating?
I don't think I have. I mean, I've had plenty of like dates to where you meet up and there's no chemistry whatsoever. And, you know, it didn't break my heart to feel, you know, to find out that they weren't that interested. So if it happened to me, I simply chalked it up to just it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody has explicitly said, I only went out with you so I can get something for free.
Mm-hmm.
So does it really happen, Tim? I mean, has something like that happened to me? No. Do I know somebody who's had that happen to them directly? No. But, you know, from the research I have done, it's something that has happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, any other thoughts on that list?
No, I mean, I think we covered it.
We did. We did. And now this.
Dun, dun, dun.
Face it, dating sucked in your 20s, gets worse in your 30s, and your 40s, forget it.
It's a cesspool out there, and we're your flotation device.
Join us weekly for saucy chat, ridiculous love gurus,
and MILF-worthy fun to spice up your life.
The MILF and Me Podcast. Every Wednesday on your favorite pod platform.
And the MILFandMePod.com.
The MILF and Me Podcast.
All right, welcome back. Thank you all for joining us here this week. We just played a commercial from one of our dear friends at the Deluxe Edition Network. So thank you for sticking around to hear our lovely voices again. I got to ask you a question.
Yeah.
Do people care more for their dogs than for their cats?
Well, you know, Tim, it's an interesting question.
Indeed it is. We came across an article in Psychology Today from Dr. Stanley Coren, PhD, DSC, FRSC. He has so many acronyms.
G-D-O-M-G.
Something like that. And yeah, he wrote an article here called Do People Care More for Their Dogs Than for Their Cats? And I take, you know, having read through the article, I see it more as an intellectual study more than anything else, but I thought it was pretty interesting. So,
well, let's just start and say from the get, I know that I like cats more than dogs. And I knew that nothing in this article was going to change my mind about that. Just to make that clear. So I think some people have an absolute, and other people are just like, I like them the same. Or I like cats a little bit better than dogs.
Yeah.
I'm saying I don't know those people. I know people who are like, I love animals. I love cats and dogs and horses, bunnies. Or they're like, I like cats only.
More than anything, I think this guy is just looking at it through kind of like an economic lens and making judgments based on that. You know, and it points out how different cats and dogs are. You know, to me, and we're going to go through the bullet points here and talk about them. But to me, I didn't get the idea that people love dogs more than cats. It's just that dogs require different types of care. And with the relationships that people, that dog owners do get with their dogs, it's different than it is with cats.
And dogs
are bitches.
The stuff you need for dogs, you need more stuff for dogs. The stuff you need for dogs is more expensive. Dogs are more expensive to treat. You know, that if they're bigger, everything is going to be more expensive. Cats can survive on their own, really. Like, if you think about feral cats, like, those are just one generation away from house cats.
Mm-hmm.
And they do just fine. The diseases get them, but in terms of being able to eat,
they are the only pets that choose to be domesticated. You know, the other ones were, you know, trained and brought in later, but the cats were just like, oh, hey, they did all this stuff just by pretending we like these people. Yeah.
Right. Or they just walk by and they're like, oh, this is my house now. And they rub their cheek against it. And they're like, oh, yeah, look at all this stuff. This is all my stuff.
Speaking of that, we did forget to bring it up about Annie with vocalizing.
Oh, right. So Annie, super cute, when she never meows at me or really when I'm around. She only meows to communicate with Tim something. And it's, she's got this really funny meow. It's like, meh.
It's so cute and funny because, like, it will happen when she wants something more than anything else. Like, if I'm walking back by the bathroom, she's running down the hallway, her tail's bounding up, and she's by the door, and she's meow. And it's like, mister, can you please let me in to play with the sink? I love it, mister. They do it with their food. You know, when we have some soft food here for them, they will, and I go into the kitchen for anything, but most cats will do this, of course.
Yeah.
You know, hang out in the kitchen and, you know, meow, meow. And then Mimsy will come running in. Mimsy's funny because she's a lot more vocal than Annie. And what I have always loved to do with cats is when, you know, Mimsy meows and has a thing where she's meowing a lot, I'll be like, yeah. Uh-huh. What? Oh, my goodness. No. And, like, the cat knows you're talking to it, and the cat appreciates that, and that's why they return the vocalization back.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just funny that I'm having this conversation with a cat, and all the cat's really just doing is just using that vocalization to get my attention for something. I mean, but that is speech, period, anyway. You know, you're using certain vocalizations.
Well, they're watching you, right? And they're like, oh, when they talk to each other, they make noises.
Mm-hmm.
We just communicate with our brains because we're so much smarter than humans.
Well, yeah, I mean, cats don't meow with each other. You know, they do more to that type of thing if they do make any noise at all. But, you know, cats found that humans react to particular types of sounds, and that sound is the sound of a baby crying. It like the cat, a cat meowing is similar in pitch to like a baby crying.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Sherman always had a really cute meow himself. It was beep. It was like a really, he put a lot into it, but it just came out really.
Yeah, sometimes he'd just look at me and go, meh. And then Phil, of course, Phil, down memory lane here. But back to our main topic at hand here. And if you haven't figured out already, folks, we do love to ramble here.
Mm-hmm.
This is an interesting article. We're going to bounce back and forth here. Did you want me to start off with the first bullet point?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. How to measure our preference for canines versus felines. One might think that there is an easy way to evaluate the value of dogs and cats in our lives. You might guess that you simply need to look at the numbers. If dogs are more valued, there ought to be more of them as pets than cats. If you look at that statistic, you will find that there are more cats than dogs in the U.S., with 86 million owned cats compared to 78 million owned dogs. However, there is a quirk here, since 39% of all American households own a dog compared to only 33% of American households with cats. The reason is that cat people like higher numbers, with 52% owning more than one cat as compared to dog owners, where only 40% own more than one dog. More direct psychological measures are needed. And with cats being so, with the ability to be able to function, you know, solely on their own as much as they have compared to dogs, and with how lonely cats can get at times, generally, yeah, most people are going to be, like in our situation, having more than one cat.
Yeah, I mean, I think most people think if you're going to have a cat, you ought to have two.
Mm-hmm.
And they ought to be compatible. So, like, when I had Sherman, when we moved and I had a job, I got another cat, and I was looking for a cat that was 6 months younger than Sherman that was female, because that's what I had read would be most compatible with a year-old male kitten. So that's where Miss Kitty came from. And I think they did much better together, even though they really kind of hated each other. They at least had someone to antagonize or defend against. Like,
yeah. And then, of course, Sherman and Phil
loved each other.
Yeah.
Loved each other.
Yeah. Within 3 days, they were both on the bed, like licking each other and holding each other and all that stuff. And because they are so self-reliant, they do have that ability to do so. Whereas dogs, you know, I think there are plenty of examples of dogs that do get lonely, tear up the house and whatnot. But if you have a golden retriever that's doing that, buying another golden retriever, depending on space limitations on where you're at, may not be the best thing. Because, like, our neighborhood, having any kind of a medium-sized or larger dog, if you live in a place like ours, which is a condo, not the most responsible thing to do. And I think,
I agree. If you live in an apartment, you got to have an apartment dog if you want a dog.
Yeah. And I mean, so I think part of that, part of the numbers explanation kind of speaks to that too, that animal owners, if they do decide to adopt a pet in their life, are generally, not all the time, but generally going to put the work in to find out and get the right pet for them.
Mm-hmm.
And which means that, yeah, you don't have people that are, you know, adopting two or three dogs at the same time, because depending on the size of the dog, it's just not realistic and not fair to them either, because dogs need, you know, different things compared to cats.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the price difference is much more dramatic with a dog to have two dogs versus two cats, because with two cats, it's just a little bit more food, a little bit more litter, and that's kind of it. That mm-hmm. costs more. With a second dog, you've got to have a leash, you've got to have a collar, you've got to have a raincoat, you've got to have those little boots, you've got to have all the shit they need to go outside, treats, bigger toys. Like, the cat stuff is cheaper than dog stuff because it's smaller, and it's stuff like a Mylar ball that costs a penny to make, or less than a penny.
Well, and with cats, they have a lot more ability. You have a lot more ability to improvise with toys, like we have done with some things here as well. So I can understand why the numbers are different. Now, does that mean I think people care about one animal compared to the other? I don't think so. I just think that the numbers are showing that for the most part, people are responsibly accepting the animal that they want into their home.
Yeah.
All right. What is the next one?
An international assessment. This newest investigation was headed by Peter Sandow of the University of Copenhagen in Denmark and included an international team of researchers. This study looked at dog and cat owners in three European nations, 1,552 from Denmark, 1,500 from Austria, and 1,558 from the UK. Participants from all three nations were administered a well-known survey instrument called the Lexington Attachment to Pets Scale, which asks a series of questions based on statements like, "I believe that my pet is my best friend," to measure the fondness that people have for their pets. The results of this survey, in all of these countries, the scores indicated that the affection felt towards dogs was higher than that felt towards cats. There were small national differences, with Denmark scoring highest, followed by Austria and the UK. However, the ranking was favoring dogs was similar across all three countries and unambiguous.
I can understand this because of how cats and dogs are two separate creatures. I mean, you've already kind of talked about the amount of money it takes to properly care for a dog compared to a cat. And with the training that you have to do with a dog, you just have to put in a lot more time with that animal. Whereas with a cat, you know, there have been times where I've had cats and didn't really interact with them for a couple of weeks, you know, apart from food and litter and all that stuff. But you get my point, you know, like yeah. They just go off and do whatever the hell they want. So if you are going to be hanging out with another living creature much more so than you would with another, I can see where bonds of affection are going to be a little more stronger too. And it, again, primarily,
like I said the other night, I've never had a lap cat, and I think if I had a lap cat, I would be much more attached to it, or I would be annoyed with it that it always wanted to sit with me every time I sat down.
Well, Annie wants to be a lap cat when I'm sleeping. And that's not fun. Mimsy will be like a bond villain cat.
Yeah,
sit on the side. And then, you know, I'd stroke her head and no, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die. Type of deal. But this I can understand. Now, just because it scored higher on a test, you know, love is love. I just think that cat owners understand that, you know, sometimes you're just going to have a cat that is a dick.
You know? And some people get their cats by, it's just a cat that hung out near my house.
Yeah.
And then it became my cat.
Yeah, I found it in a dumpster. Whereas with a dog, you got to go to a specific breeder if you want a specific dog or something like that. So, yeah. All right, shall I go on with the next one?
Yes, please.
Putting a dollar value on our feelings. Go USA. I explored the same issue in a study involving more than 6,000 individuals, which I conducted in the mid-1990s. I reported the results in my book, Why We Love the Dogs We Do. Specifically, I asked participants, if your pet had a life-threatening problem and could be saved by a medical procedure, how much would you be willing to pay for its treatment? The average amount that dog owners were willing to pay was approximately twice as much as the amount that cat owners were willing to pay. The actual values were $1,183 for dogs versus $610 for cats. The value sounded a bit low, but we're talking about 1990s dollars. Nearly two decades later, Colleen Kirk at the New York Institute of Technology in New York City followed up my study by asking a similar question and found virtually identical results in that people were willing to spend twice as much for life-saving medical care for their dog than for their cat. Although due to inflation, the dollar values were considerably larger and the averages were $10,689 for dogs versus $5,174 for cats. This new European study also used a variant of the same question, and for all three nations surveyed, it was confirmed that dog owners were willing to spend more money on veterinary care for their pets than were cat owners. This suggests that the preference for dogs over cats is historically stable, since data using similar measures has produced a consistent result over three decades. Now, I think they're putting it in rather cold terms that it doesn't need to be, because when it comes to an operation on a golden retriever compared to the common house cat, when you have a creature that's going to be much more smaller, I guess, like it gets to the point to where maybe
they need less anesthesia, they need fewer sutures, they need less time. You know, everything about cats is cheaper than dogs when you're talking about veterinary care.
And I think, too, because of how people have different relationships with dogs to their cats, I think, yeah, you can probably argue that people would treat dogs more like they would their young children than they would a cat. It doesn't mean that people don't have love and affection for their cats, but I think more people are willing to say, I don't think I think this treatment that you're suggesting is invasive and will not save him or her, so it's better to put them down. I think cat owners are much more willing to let their pets be put down than dogs, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing. Like because I don't think a vet would necessarily kill a pet just because, you know, like it would have to be like what happened with Phil, you know, like water on the heart and whatnot. Like, could I have spent money to save him theoretically? Maybe, but you know, he was 14, heart issues. Like, yeah.
So interesting. I have worked for veterinarians and I've owned cat, and I've spent a lot of money on veterinary care for my cats. Mm-hmm. And for Sherman, I was counting it up and it was around $10,000, which to me was a lot of money. I can't afford to have a pet that over the course of 16 years costs $20,000. I can't afford to have a kid, which probably costs, you know, an extra $400,000 a year or something.
I mean, at the end of the day, responsible pet owners are going to invest their money in treatments that they feel will not be super invasive and that will actually work. You know, I like I said, I think cat owners are much more accepting of a vet saying we can't fight this than a dog owner. Does that mean cat owners care less about their animals? I don't think so at all. I just think it's a different mindset, really.
Poor little kitties. It makes me sad.
All right.
But I will disagree with what you said about the vets wouldn't put down an animal. Vets will put down an animal if you call and ask them. Okay. Because animals in this country are not entitled to any more rights than property.
Even though they are living creatures, so yeah.
And we know that they have emotions, and we know that they're sentient. You know, they can want things and communicate their wants, and can not like things and communicate the things they don't like. Like,
I want to go to the bathroom. All right, how about you tackle that last bullet point there?
Okay, number four. Other measures that confirm these trends. Although both dogs and cats provide joy and companionship to their humans, the picture that emerges is that dogs are more emotionally satisfying, and over time and cross-culturally, dogs are also more universally cherished. This newest piece of research confirms what specific scientific data has indicated in the past using data from many different sources. For example, among American pet owners, dogs are taken to the vet twice as frequently as cats, even though there's no medical justification for this difference. Furthermore, the emotional investment that we have in dogs shows up in that dogs' owners are more likely than cat owners to follow their veterinarian's medical care recommendations, and dogs are more likely to receive preventative care such as vaccinations, regular physical examinations, and dental treatment. It is also the case that dogs are more likely than cats to be given premium and organic food and are also more frequently given special gifts. One last statistic of interest is that the amount of money spent on cat treats is well in excess of $100 million a year. And while this seems like an astonishing figure, it is tiny compared to the more than $1 billion a year that is spent on dog treats. In my house, at least, giving a pet a treat is simply a way of saying, I love you.
I mean, you kind of touched upon it earlier, like you do have more people getting cats from the most unique places, you know, hey, look what I found type deal, instead of, you know, going to a special breeder to get a specific kind or going to the Humane Society or something like that. People are more likely to find cats in unique situations. But do I think that means they're loved less? No. But I can't speak for everybody. I mean, I love animals, period. So,
yeah.
I mean, and I understand, you know, how I treat a cat would be much different than how I would treat a dog. But I think overall people, you know, maybe, I mean, there are some bad people out there that treat animals bad, no doubt. I'm not denying that. But this just is, to me, this study that they're talked about here, it doesn't necessarily show that dogs are loved more. It's just that they're different. They have different needs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in order to successfully raise a dog, you do have to spend more. Whereas with a cat, they're self-reliant, self-sufficient 95% of the time. You know, as long as you got the food and water going on a regular basis, they're going to be cool.
Yeah.
You know, so, but even though I disagree with the idea that dogs are loved more, I think this was still interesting to kind of showcase that there are differences between the two. It's not a case of dogs being loved more. It's just that they're different.
It might be a case of dog owners being stupider.
That might be it too. I mean, we are talking about, you know, more dogs are being dressed up in stupid outfits and walking around like, look at me. Whereas you put a costume on a cat and the cat's going to look at you like, motherfucker.
Right. It's not going to move at all. Right. It may lay down and act like he can't walk.
It's stuck. I'm paralyzed. I didn't want to be Sully from Monsters, Inc. Anyway, at the end of the day, folks, love your pets. Give them a hug. Give them a kiss. Treat them well. Give them a treat, because that is one way to say I love you. And the way to most animals' belly, most way to their heart is through their belly.
Yep.
Yep. Is that right, Mimsy? Yeah. Okay. I have Mimsy in my hand for reference sake. I mean, like, I was just like a 3-year-old at that point, you know, on a telephone conversation. Hey, do you see that? What? I'm not there in a room with you. I don't see it.
Look how cute the baby is.
Something like that. But any other thoughts?
Nope, I have no other thoughts.
Okay. Well, thank you all very much for checking out another episode of Friends Talking Nerdy, part of the Deluxe Edition Network. Each Monday, we'll have something in this podcast space to entertain your ear holes. Until we meet again, we bid you adieu.
Good night.
Woof, woof.
Subscribe to Friends Talking Nerdy on iTunes, the Google Play Music Store, as well as Spotify. Remember to support Friends Talking Nerdy on Patreon. Goodbye, darling.